Defense Podcast.
Greetings, Reds fans, and welcome once again to another episode of the Pastime Reds Podcast. I'm your host, Cam Miller. This is episode 2 of the podcast, and of course, the Pastime Reds Podcast is a look into the history of the Cincinnati Reds. And it's brought to you by BlogRedMachine.com. BlogRedMachine is the blog for all of your news, notes, and other pertinent information regarding the Cincinnati Reds. And the site is through the Fansided Network, which is through the Sports Illustrated family of sites. So happy to be here once again. And on this episode 2 journey, we're going to look into 3 anniversaries. Pete Rose makes his debut 50 years ago. Marty Brenneman makes his debut on the Reds radio network 40 years ago. And Great American Ballpark. It's hard to believe, but Great American Ballpark has been open now for 10 years. The old ball orchard on the banks of the Ohio River opened the gates in 2003. So 10 years of Great American Ballpark. Now for the Great American Ballpark 10th anniversary, I decided to make a top 10 list of the greatest moments, kind of like what I did with the opening day podcast, which was the all-time opening day Reds lineup. For the Great American Ballpark segment, we're going to talk about the top 10 greatest moments. Now, I've got a special guest lined up to kind of help me with that. I got some great feedback, by the way, on Facebook and Twitter and through some emails, so I want to thank you out there for that. Your ideas of what a top 10 list should look like. And it's only been 10 years, but there's been some pretty impressive moments for Great American Ballpark already. So we'll look into that. And I've got a special guest lined up that's going to help me look at that. Now, I plan on having special guests throughout the episodes. In fact, I've got quite a few lined up for future episodes. Some writers, some people with the Cincinnati Reds, and most importantly, I have fans. The most important special guests of all, fans of the Cincinnati Reds, to share some of their memories and moments in dealing with the Cincinnati Reds history. So we'll get to that a little bit later. And of course, I will give you my random Red for episode 2. So let's dive right in. It's March 10th, 1963. The Cincinnati Reds are in Tampa, Florida, where they trained for many, many years for spring training. And the Chicago White Sox are in town for another meaningless spring training game. Now, there's a coach for the Reds, and his name's Mike Raba. And he looks over and he sees this kid, number 27, named Pete Rose. And he's getting ready to leave the ballpark. Now, you gotta remember, a lot of the times, especially in a game like this, which was getting ready to go into extra innings, it's been a long day, a lot of the guys would just go ahead and take off, go home for the night, rest up, get ready for the next day. But the game's getting ready to go into extra innings, and Coach Raba sees Pete getting ready to leave, and he says, "Hey, Rose, where are you going? You need to get back in this bench. You want to make this club? You better get over here and get ready. You may be needed." So Rose obliges, and he goes over and sits on the bench. And the ninth inning comes, and manager Fred Hutchinson says, "Rose, get in the game. Pinch runner." So Rose enters the ball game, and he steps to the plate in the 11th inning, and he hits a double. The game goes on and moves to the 14th. Pete Rose steps to the plate again, hits another double, but this time he scores the winning run, and the Reds beat the White Sox. So a pretty good game for the kid who was about to leave the ballpark. Now, Rose hit 290 that spring. Had a pretty decent spring, but you got to remember that Don Blasingame was the starting second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, and he was a popular veteran. He was popular with the fans. He was popular with his teammates. just a general, a good guy. And he batted 281 in 1962. So he had a pretty good campaign the year prior, and he was still in the prime of his career. But there was just no room for Pete. So Pete had assumed that he was going to head back to the minors and work on his game, and that would be that, and he would get his shot someday. But the baseball gods, they had other plans. Don Blasingame injures his groin, and Pete Rose takes his spot. So here we are. It's opening day 1963, April the 8th. It's the Reds versus the Pirates at Crosley Field to start the season. And Pete's in the clubhouse. It's about 3.5-4 hours before the game starts, and he's there with his father Harry, manager Fred Hutchinson, and other Reds personnel, and they give him a contract for $7,500, which he signs. He's now the starting second baseman for his hometown Reds, and he'll bat number two in the lineup. So the 28,896 fans have taken their seats at Crosley Field. It's the top of the first inning, and it didn't take long for Pete to get involved in the game. Roberto Clemente is at the plate. There's one out. He hits a ground ball to Leo Cardenas, the shortstop, who flips over to Pete at second, over to Gordy Coleman, a 6-4-3 double play to end the inning. So here we are in the bottom of the first inning, and Pete is batting second. He takes four pitches. Ball one, ball two, ball three, ball four. Take your base. He drops his bat and sprints to first base for the first time as a major leaguer. Two batters later, Frank Robinson steps up and smashes a home run. Pete Rose, of course, scores and congratulates Frank at the plate. A pretty good way to start your career for the Cincinnati Reds. But overall, it wasn't really a great start for Pete. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until April 13th, a week later, when Pete Rose stepped to the plate in the bottom of the eighth inning. It was 7-1 Pirates, Bob Friends on the mound. The game's pretty much out of hand, and Rose had been hit by a pitch in the game and he walked, but he'd yet to put the ball in play, so he was looking for a hit, his first big league hit. And it came off Bob Friend, a triple. The next batter, Pinson singles and Rose scores. The Reds would go on to lose, but it was the first of 4,256 hits for Peter Edward Rose, a triple off of Bob Friend. Now, Pete had a pretty good campaign the rest of the year. He had his ups and downs, but when all was said and done, he played in 157 games, had 170 hits, and he batted .273 to win the Rookie of the Year award. So it was 50 years ago, April 8th, 1963, when Pete Rose made his debut for the Cincinnati Reds. And the rest, as they say, is history. One of my first memories of Reds baseball is Marty Brenneman. Whether it was in my dad's station wagon or in the backyard with the radio blasting and my brothers and I playing wiffle ball, Marty Brenneman was like a part of the family. And it's been 40 years since we first heard Marty's voice on the Reds radio network. Marty Brenneman was hired January 21st, 1974, after spending three seasons with the Tidewater Tides. And of course, his first game was opening day of that year, when he broadcast the Cincinnati Reds versus the Atlanta Braves on opening day. And of course, that game is of historical importance because it was the game where Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth for the all-time home run record. So, can you imagine? Your first game broadcasting Major League Baseball, and you have to make one of the most historic calls of all time. Now, I've been fortunate enough to meet Marty Brenneman on a few occasions, and I've gotten a chance to hear him tell some fantastic stories of his days broadcasting Cincinnati Reds baseball, but this is one of my all-time favorites, and it's also actually retold in the book Opening Day by Greg Rhodes and John Arority. So as the story goes, it's spring training 1974, Marty Brenneman's very first spring training broadcasting the Reds. Now, Marty Brenneman was hired to replace the very popular Al Michaels. Al Michaels had left to go do the San Francisco Giants baseball games, so Marty was hired to replace him, and Al was pretty popular, and pretty big shoes to fill for Marty, so, as you can imagine, Marty's a little nervous. Now, this is the first home game for the Reds. It's spring training, and they called Al Lopez Field their home in Tampa, Florida. So the engineer sends it over to Marty. Marty's a little nervous. He's getting ready to broadcast his first game in Al Lopez Field. And what does he say? "Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Al Michaels Field." Well, as you can imagine, Marty knew as soon as he said it the mistake he made. But during the commercial break, Joe Nuxall let him have it, and it was something that he never let him live down through all the years broadcasting together. But I think Marty Brenneman did a pretty good job winning over the fans, as he's been broadcasting now for 40 years. You know, we've been pretty fortunate. We've had Red Barber, we've had Wade Hoyt, Joe Nuxall. We've had some fantastic broadcasters. But I think when it's all said and done, people will always remember the voice of the Cincinnati Reds as Marty Brenneman. Congratulations on 40 years broadcasting Reds baseball. As I said at the opening of this podcast, from time to time, I'm going to have special guests come on and talk about different segments in Reds history. So I thought for this segment, the Great American Ballpark 10th Anniversary, why not talk to the guy that gave me the idea in the first place of doing a top 10 list of Great American Ballpark moments. He's my brother, Chet Miller. Chet played college baseball at the College of Charleston and went on to coach high school baseball at Paris High School in Paris, Kentucky. Chet's living up in Michigan these days, so I contacted him through a video chat and asked him to give me his best moments, his top moments in Great American Ballpark history. And this is what he had to say.
When I was thinking about this list, I was trying to decide, is it the top 10 moments at Great American Ballpark, the top 10 games? How personal was it to me? Those kind of things. And some of them that you looked at were top 10, there was only one play that would make. So I was like, that's not really the whole game. So what I kind of tried to do was combine all those factors and put it into one list. The honorable mentions that didn't make it, one from last year was July 19th, 2012. The Reds come back from being down 6-0 in the bottom of the fifth to the Arizona Diamondbacks. They come back and win 7-6, and that was kind of midway through the year there. You kind of knew they were going to make a strong run to the division title and sparked them onto a 10-game winning streak for the first time since 99, and they ended up going 22 out of 25 and basically right there wrapped up the division. Another one that was just on the edge was Johnny Cueto's debut, April 3rd, 2008. He struck out 10, just one hit to Justin Upton. It was a home run, so he didn't have a shutout, but kind of a Reds pitcher that they had drafted and brought up through the minors, and it was just one of those games that, 10 strikeouts. It was like, all right, we finally got some young pitching. Another game later on that year, Jay Bruce, after just coming up during that week, when he came up in the bottom of the 10th, you just kind of knew something special was going to happen. The tear he was on, hits a walk-off to beat the Atlanta Braves 8-7 in 10 innings. That was on May 31st, 2008. That was a pretty exciting game to watch, even though you knew they weren't going to win anything that year. That was kind of the start, the way they finished up that year. That was kind of the start of something big. The day before Johnny Cueto's debut, Edwin Encarnacion can't get a bunt down and finally hits a 3-run walk-off to give Dusty Baker his first win as a Reds manager. And then one that was kind of on the borderline, Reds 7, Mets 6, opening day 2005. There was a couple walk-off home runs on opening day, but this one was the one I decided to leave off. Adam Dunn hits two home runs. The second one ties the game at 6, and then fresh face Joe Randa goes deep. Hits a walk-off to win it against the Mets, a team that was pretty stacked that year. Those were the ones that didn't really make it. They were just on the edge for the top 10 games at Great American Ballpark. But cracking the list at number 10 is Ken Griffey Jr., comes off the disabled list on May 11, 2006 to beat the Washington Nationals in the bottom of the 11th. Ken Griffey, it's a walk-off home run. One of his, I don't know if he caught signature moments, but one of his big-time moments that, you know, everybody could get behind a Great American Ballpark for the Reds. He didn't have too many of them, even though people forget about that first year he had, first couple years where he put up some stats. But that was just kind of a, you know, one of those Ken Griffey Jr. iconic moments. Because most of his big-time home runs came, milestone home runs, came away from Great American. Number nine, my birthday, March 31st, 2011, opening day. Gets started off on the wrong foot with Bolquez toeing the rubber, gives up a leadoff home run. But trailing 6-3 going to the ninth on opening day, kind of not too outstanding of a game, obviously being 6-3 up to that point. But then they get the bases loaded with nobody out. They end up down 6-4 with Ramon Hernandez coming to the plate, and he just hits a line shot into the Brewers bullpen in right field, opposite field. And anytime the Reds win on opening day on a walk-off on your birthday, it's just one of those special moments. And that was, you know, opening day coming off the playoff year, so, you know, everybody had high expectations. And then when he hit that, it was just kind of like things continuing to roll from the year before. Number eight, October of 2010, the first playoff game ever played at Great American Ballpark. Now, this was kind of a controversial one. I wasn't sure whether to put it on or not because, obviously, they lost the game to the Phillies. Cole Hamels shut them down. It was game three, so that got them swept in the five-game series. They lost the first two, obviously, at Philly, including getting no hit by Roy Halladay. It was just, but anytime, you know, the atmosphere in Cincinnati for Reds baseball is, for a big game is one thing, for a playoff game is another. And there were, it was just nice to have a packed house, you know, TBS, I think it was, had it on, and they come live, and everybody's waving the white towels, and Joe Morgan threw out the first pitch, and it was just, you know, you knew they weren't going to win it, the series, definitely not the World Series, but it was just a sign of things to come with having a young roster and being back in the playoffs, and hopefully the first of many at Great American Ballpark. So that was a pretty cool atmosphere going up, leading up to the game. Number seven, opening day 2003, the very first day of the ballpark, on my 23rd birthday, being able to go, not many chances you get in your lifetime to go to the opening day of a stadium. You know, Reds opening day tickets are hard enough to get, but to get opening day tickets to the stadium and it being your favorite team, and being able to go with my family, having it open on my birthday, and, you know, we parked in Newport and walked across the bridge like we always used to do as kids, and just seeing it as we're walking up and having heard all the different artists, seeing all the different artist renderings and what it was going to look like, what it was going to have, this and that. But it really being the last of the cookie cutter AstroTurf stadiums to get rid of. PNC had already opened. St. Louis had already transformed their old ballpark. The AstroTurf was gone. So having seen Riverfront as a kid with the AstroTurf, and then as everybody started to build all these nice stadiums, it was like, you know, when's it going to be the Reds' turn? And then they put the grass in, which helped at Riverfront, and then they tear out the outfield and playing, you know, with cranes in the background, and finally it was done. It was there, it was on the river. It was just a special, even though they lost and it was freezing cold, it was just a special day. I think everybody always remember going to see that park for the very first time, having been in the cookie cutter stadium of Riverfront for all those years. Rolling along at number six, August 9th, 2006. Reds beat the Cardinals 8-7. They were in the midst of a pennant chase with the Cardinals that year, and Jim Edmonds hits a first inning grand slam. They end up falling behind 6-3 and then get a couple of home runs here and there. And then David Ross completes the comeback with a 2-run walk-off. I know, you know, in the steroid era and everything, people complain, but when you're at the ballpark and you get to see a game 8-7 on a walk-off home run, and you know there's grand slams, and sure, it's a long August day, but it's just something about the Reds Cardinals and seeing the offensive explosion that went on there, and then having David Ross complete it in the midst of a pennant race there in August. That's just a special moment. Number five, halfway done, 2010, the Civil Rights Game, Reds 4, Cardinals 3. Willie Mays in attendance, Billie Jean King, over 40,000 Reds fans there. The Reds have a 4-2 lead going in the ninth. Cordero gives up a run, and then Skip Schumacher's on first, and Joe Mather lines a shot down the left field corner, and Chris Heisey, everybody's super sub, sprints over, picks it up, makes a perfect throw to Orlando Cabrera, the young guy throwing to the veteran, and Schumacher's trying to score from first to tie the game, and Cabrera makes a perfect throw, textbook play from the outfielder to the cutoff man to home plate, and Ramon Hernandez catches the ball, tags out Schumacher, and on a walk-off play at the plate to beat your division rival. And that was kind of one of those moments that sparked that playoff run that year. But that's just a special moment to see it play at the plate to end the game in a one-run ball game there. Number four in the top 10 list, June 30th, 2006, Reds-Indians. You know, still kind of the beginning era of the battle for the Ohio Cup there. And Elizardo Ramirez throws some BP bullets down the middle in the first inning, giving up 5 runs. And Cleveland takes a 7-0 lead into the eighth. And the Reds boppers come up and ends up coming down to the bottom of the ninth, where Adam Dunn hits a walk-off grand slam to win it 9-8. Having something everybody dreams of, hitting a walk-off grand slam to win it, but to beat, you know, your in-state rivals in an interleague game at home, just an unbelievable situation to see all those Reds and Indians fans there at the game and have it end on a walk-off grand slam. Truly unbelievable game. Number three, July 15th, 2011, Reds Cardinals again. Let's see, Reds win at 6-5. At that point, you know, they still had a shot at making the playoffs. There was still a little uncertainty in the standings there. But Brandon Phillips ends up hitting a walk-off home run to beat the Cardinals 6-5, and seeing him going around the bases with that emotion, beating his rivals, with all the dust-ups that they'd, you know, all the controversy they'd had between Phillips and the Cardinals, and just seeing him go, the fans going crazy, and Phillips around the bases, truly amazing. Anytime you went on a walk-off is special, but beating your division rival on a walk-off is an amazing, amazing feeling and a truly amazing game. Number two, last year, Mother's Day, Joey Votto hits a walk-off grand slam to beat the Washington Nationals 9-6. Trailing 6-3 going to the seventh, they make a comeback. And just being at home watching the game with my mom on Mother's Day, and her being the ever the optimist as the Henry Rodriguez, their closer, struggling with his control, and seeing how the lineup's turning over, and we're starting to make a comeback. You know, my mom says Joey Votto's going to win it on a walk-off. And, of course, I say, no way. And sure enough, he walks with people, gives up a couple hits, and then Votto comes up and hits a 2-2 ball over the center field wall. And one of Joey Votto's signature moments in his career already. That's already got a lot of accolades. And it was also a 3-home-run game for Votto. So somebody that plays the game the right way, having an outstanding day and then ending it on Mother's Day with a walk-off, truly an unbelievable game to see. And number one, last but not least, the one that I think most people would have as their number one game for Great American Ballpark in the 10 seasons, September 28th, 2010, Reds 3, Astros 2, Jay Bruce, first pitch, walk-off, clinch the division. Truly, once again, sitting there watching it with my mom, truly just an amazing situation. Growing up with the Reds in the 80s and seeing them struggle and then, you know, win it in 90 and then not make the playoffs since 95 and just all the struggles and all the turnover on the roster and all the free agents and draft picks that don't pan out. And then seeing and that's what I think made it so special was seeing somebody that they had drafted lead them to the playoffs on a walk-off home run. It was such an amazing situation to sit there and watch. And as that ball goes over and the true joy on his face as he knows he got it, he raises his fist up, Jay Bruce hits the walk-off, the celebration starts, and the Cincinnati Reds were heading to the playoffs for the first of what is hopefully many years. So there might be some controversial picks in there, but that is Chet Miller's top 10 greatest games at Great American Ballpark.
That's a pretty good list. You can't go wrong with any of Chet's picks. And I'm sure that, you know, most of you would have those games on there. Maybe not necessarily in that order. But I liked how he used some of more of a personal touch to it, where some of the more personal games that were near and dear to him might have been a little higher on the list than maybe what you would have. Episode 2's Random Red is a Reds pitcher by the name of Junie Barnes. Junie Barnes was a pitcher who had a submarine style, and he only appeared in 2 games for the Reds in 1934. As a matter of fact, those were the only 2 games he ever played in the major leagues. He made his debut September 12th for the Reds against the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field, facing one batter. Manager Chuck Dressen sent in Barnes with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth against the Dodgers, and he ended up walking in the winning run. The final score ended up being 8-7. His next game and his final game was September 21st versus the Pirates at Forbes Field, where again he faced the final batter of the game, but the Reds ended up losing that game 9-3. Junie Barnes was a pretty good athlete. He played basketball and baseball at Wake Forest, and as a pitcher for the Wilmington Pirates minor league team in 1933, he fanned 252 batters. So he was a pretty good pitcher, just couldn't quite cut it at the major leagues. But he has the rare distinction of playing in 2 games, facing 2 batters, with 2 games finished. So that's this episode's Random Red, Junie Barnes. Well, that just about wraps up episode 2 of the Pastime Reds podcast. I'd like to thank my guest, Chet Miller, for contributing the top 10 greatest moments in Great American Ballpark's 10-year history. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Cam Miller Scribe. You can email me at cammillerfilms@gmail.com and check out my articles on blogredmachine.com as well as all of the other great writers, blogredmachine.com. Thanks for listening, and this podcast is history.